I'm used to it at this point, honestly. Vegas hates me. It's all good. I'm not worried about it. Those are just odds, and odds mean shit to me. And with that, welcome to Early Stoppage, a show where the news of the day is usually given just enough time, but sometimes not enough. If this is your first time stopping by, we thank you, and get ready for something you won't find anywhere else. I'm John Franklin. I'm joined by the godfather of Fight Night Picks, Craig Allen. Craig, how are you?
John, you sound like you bought out a convenience store of all the Ricola that they had. You sound great. I think it's going to be an awesome day. Listen, it's been a busy news week for MMA. We have a huge card coming up this weekend with pay-per-view UFC 260. It couldn't be a better week to be an MMA fan. Let's get into it.
On this episode of Early Stoppage, we talk PFL's newest Ray, Poirier's choice, and what's next for the highlight. But we begin with Misha Tate. Craig, the former UFC bantamweight champion and future Hall of Famer, has said that after 5 years, she's ready to come back and make another run at it. Here are some of the quotes from her SiriusXM show. There is a fire that has been lit. Tate said, my heart is completely full of passion. I feel like I'm totally reinvigorated. When you know, and I just know I've always been that person to lead with my heart and do what I feel like my calling is in life. And it's never steered me wrong. She went on to say, I've got 6 fights on the contract. I've got 2 years that I know for sure I want to dedicate to the sport. But look, anything can happen off of one fight. I'd love to run the fight back with Amanda Nunes again because I know I have the style to beat her. I'm not at all going to take anything away from her. She's a scary woman. She hits like a man. I know that. I've been in there with her, and I've seen what she's done since, but I know I have the style to beat her. Craig, Tate said a lot. I just said a lot. And you could argue she said all the right things. But has anything really changed since she left?
Well, why did she leave in the first place, John? I hate to answer a question with a question, but why? Why do you think?
I think she left to have and raise a family, and she felt like the person that had the belt in the division that she fought in was so far away from her, both stylistically and skill-wise, that this would be the good time to go start a family.
So Amanda Nunes leveled up, women's GOAT. 4 years ago, arguable. But Tate lost to Raquel Pennington her last time out. And it was kind of one of those, the student beat the teacher, from the season of The Ultimate Fighter. Misha Tate loses. Now, boom, goes the Dynamite. Maybe the sports passed me by. What changed in 4 years? Because the last time I checked, Misha Tate was what? In some sort of capacity in a high-level management role with one championship? The last time she posted about one championship on her Instagram, February 18th. And if you look into her bio on Instagram, it's now out looking for cupcakes and then a cameo link. Listen, you can get a cameo done by Misha Tate. That's cool and all. Haven't really seen a lot of one championship stuff anymore. So a lot of people have been talking about the fact that is she still involved with one? I honestly don't know. Matt Allen, Craig Allen, were both on the SCMP MMA live chat show last night with JHK. Friend of the show, member of the show. And even John didn't know. He's like, listen, straight up, I don't even know if she's involved with one championship. If anybody knows, it's probably going to be him. So for him not to know, it's weird. For this fight to happen, Tate hasn't fought in, 4 years and 4 months. She's on a 2-fight losing streak. She's fighting a 44-year-old gym teacher on a 4-fight losing streak. So if she beats Marion Renault, who is by all accounts and by all means from the eyeball test, she's still a game fighter. Macy Strasson's a good fighter. Marion Renault at least put up a halfway competitive fight. But I'm not going to learn a whole lot about Misha Tate from a fight with a 44-year-old at this point in time. Like, it's kind of crazy. Do you want to go out there and fight Carlos Condit? Would I learn anything from it? Probably not. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah, it is crazy. And I think that I will say this in Misha Tate's defense. The hope is that the Amanda Nunes that you would be facing now is an older, slower, like you would hope that maybe Amanda has regressed back to the field, but you haven't fought in 5 years, so you've regressed as well. So, had you, went to a different promotion or something like that, maybe you could say, I've been active, Amanda's been active, she's getting older, I'm getting older too, but maybe I'm sharpened up. I've never seen it, with the exception of who may be the greatest of all time, George St. Pierre, where you take the long absence and come back and you're able to compete at a high level. Now, in St. Pierre's case, you could argue what the high level was. Depends on how good you thought Michael Bisping was as a champion. You know, I don't really see it with Tate. She might surprise me. I know that she's got a lot of skills. I know that she's been in or around gyms in the last 5 years, but certainly not at a high level necessarily. So it's not like she just took 5 years off to be a mom. I mean, she's been around, but at the same time, I don't know. I'm not expecting much.
I mean, the best part of your entire answer is I expect you to say, well, I've been changing because I built my life around you. Time makes you bolder. Listen, John, I mean, time does make you bolder. And the retirement was short-lived for a bold guy in Khamzat Chimaev. And he's back and targeting a return to the cage in July. He wants to fight Neil Magny, but it's unclear if Magny's going to be waiting around. So, A, are you surprised that Chimaev's return? Are you surprised at the fact that it was so short-lived? And really, does it affect the sport or the UFC or his division in a huge capacity? I mean, this is a guy that had a huge star. The biggest post I ever had on Reddit, Pride Rules MMA, you can find me there, was posting that Chimaev retired. And I'm eager to kind of get your thoughts on the whole short-lived retirement.
Well, listen, we've talked about this a lot on this podcast, which is sometimes you retire just to get stopped, just to stop the questions from being asked of when you're going to return, and retiring just buys you some time to just chill out, everything's settled, and then you can kind of come back on your own timetable. You don't have to constantly be giving people updates about your health and how COVID's going for you. So that's kind of why we thought that he had retired anyway on this show. So from that perspective, I'm not surprised it was short-lived. I'm surprised it was short-lived in the sense that his recovery is going well enough to announce a return. Now, here's the thing. We don't know what we have because of the COVID complications in this fighter. So the question was posed, does it affect the sport, the UFC, or just his division? I would say at this point, just his division, because, you know, before he was a mover and a shaker in the UFC. He was on, you know, Dana's, if you looked at Dana's recent calls, people affiliated with Khamzat Chimaev would be in his recent calls. I don't know. I think it's kind of wait and see now. We need to see what he comes back as.
And I mean, listen, could it be the vitamin D IV drips? Who knows how he got better so quick? So it is great to see, but you're right. I mean, this is a guy that was originally supposed to be taking on the number 3 ranked welterweight in the world. And I think with time, we might still get a fight against Leon Edwards. It's not the, you know, Habib Ferguson matchup of yesteryear, though it has been booked about as many times in a very short amount of time. I think Magny makes sense. You want to give Khamzat time to come back. You want to give him a low risk, low reward type of guy at welterweight. That kind of seems to be the division. I don't really think middleweight right now is the plan. So low risk, low reward. But yeah, at this point in time, I agree. It's more or less just this division that's affected by this.
And we move on, Craig. Our old friends who happen to be enemies are at it again. John Jones says that it's hilarious that Israel Adesanya still thinks the two will fight. And Adesanya says the Jones fight will be there. But for now, he's focused on Darren Till. If Darren Till gets a win in his next fight. So who's right, Craig? Is Bones right? Is Stylebender right? Who's more right about the state of a Jones-Stylebender fight for the future?
Last weekend, fight talk escalated to a point in which I crossed the line. I understand the gravity of this word and how it can affect and hurt other people apart from my opponent, although that was never my intention. I'm still to growing under the spotlight. I don't really get that. My reading comprehension tonight's been spotty at best. And I take this as a lesson to be more selective with the words under pressure. Israel Adesanya tonight. Israel Adesanya's making apologies on Twitter for things that he said. He's going out there and talking about Darren Till in the media. John, I'm going to flip this question on its head. Why are we not focusing on Marvin Vettori? He's the biggest elephant in the room. Like, really, Vettori has that main event against Darren Till. It's coming up in 2 weeks. That's a huge fight. I think Vettori blows the doors off Darren Till, and I want to see the rematch between Adesanya and Vettori. So is Adesanya doing almost like the Khamzat Chimaev? I'm going to fool you over here while I'm really looking at this. You know, I need to take some time away so you're not focusing on me, so I retire. I'm really talking about Darren Till, but expecting a rematch with Vettori. Now, obviously, Till, he's gotten the promotional bump before, especially before the fight with Tyron Woodley, and we saw how that went. But he still has a little bit of the shine. Marvin Vettori's kind of in the down low. Like, he's been an Underground Whisper Network guy since even before the fight against Israel Adesanya. So to me, it's weird that we're not even kind of talking about Marvin Vettori. And I think he deserves some of that shine, because if he goes out there and performs impress in that main of 2 weeks, I mean, again, sky's the limit. Who else is in contention? Cannoneer needs to fight. Whitaker's got one against Gastelum, but Whitaker's in such a bad spot. We can go down through the list, but I really do think Vettori has a huge shot, and it's a shame he's not even getting mentioned.
It is a shame he's not getting mentioned, and I think there's a way to book this division that really works out the best. You know, last time we talked, and we talked about the division, we talked about Paulo Costa and Jared Cannoneer. I love that fight. That's a fight they should make. So I'm with you. I don't think we're saying Marvin Vettori's name enough, but here's the problem, you know. Darren Till's a nutcase, and he gets on Twitter and Instagram and makes a lot of money for himself by doing weird shit like going back and forth with Mike Perry and doing all these memes. So Israel Adesanya sees that and says, okay, great, I'm not going to have to do all the heavy lifting in the promotion of this fight. With Marvin Vettori, it's going to take a lot. I mean, there's a lot there for Marvin Vettori as a fighter. There's not a lot to promote. You know, even if you want to talk about the fact that this is a rematch, it's not a rematch of a great fight necessarily. So that, from that perspective, Izzy's going to have to do some work in the promotion. And just so everybody's clear, I don't want to just sort of gloss over what Craig talked about. And, you know, Adesanya's making apologies for a rape joke. And we're not definitely sitting here saying that's okay. But typically when these kind of things come up, Craig and I don't want to speak for Craig, I'll speak for myself. We look at it from a perspective of how's it going to affect the cage. Is this something that came out of the cage? This, to me, although it's insensitive, I feel like Adesanya's kind of handling it the right way, and it won't, he's not going to get canceled. He's not, so that, from that perspective, we're not crazy about what he said, but it's probably not going to affect his career. So I don't want you guys to think that we're not giving it any attention or, like, you know, any of that stuff. Back to what we were talking about, which is Vettori. Yeah, I just think that Adesanya's concerned that if he fights Vettori, it's not going to be a big enough fight.
Yeah, and that makes sense. And I mean, for Adesanya, I mean, he has been a guy, like, you know, you're bold, you're brash, and sometimes it blows up in your face. We saw that happen with poor old Kevin Holland against Derek Brunson. So, yeah, I mean, stuff like that, you hate to see it. You never want to condone it. It'll be interesting to see if it pops up before his next fight. But if we move on, John, this week, when the subject of Justin Gaethje and his future came up, Dana White said he'll probably get the winner of the title fight between Charles Oliveira, your guy, Charlie Olives, and Michael Chandler. Do you think that giving him a title fight off of a loss makes any sense?
Again, you know, the biggest mistake that we make in this sport, and I say this all the time, is someone has to, and I know you hate this phrase, but I'll use it anyway. Someone has to glow up off of a fight, and someone has to, like, you can't have it both ways. You can't say, well, Israel Adesanya isn't who we thought he was, and also Jan Blachowicz didn't look impressive. One or the other thing has to be, you have to pick one. Either Adesanya wasn't as great as we thought he was, or Blachowicz is better than we thought he was. So my point in saying that is if we're going to heap the flowers at Khabib Nurmagomedov, if you're ever going to get a title shot off of a loss, that's the loss to get a title shot off of. So if we think this, you know, if we're calling Khabib a goat and putting him in those conversations, then you got to say, yeah, if that's the guy that Gaethje lost to, then we'll give him a pass. And yeah, he should get. I think the thing that Gaethje's always going to have going for him, especially in Dana's eyes, is that guy is an action fighter of the highest pedigree. And Dana will always want to see that kid go in there and swing.
I mean, Ferguson's got a fight booked already, and McGregor's probably going to fight Poirier. So there's your 6-1. Gaethje's the only guy up in the top, six, I guess, because Dos Anjos doesn't really have anything cooking, that really doesn't have a fight book. So I would expect Gaethje, maybe he weighs in as an alternate for that main event. Not that I worry about the weights for either Oliveira or the man himself. One really tough out, Bellator's own, Michael Chandler. But yeah, I think it's fair. I mean, listen, I am the biggest proponent of not getting a title shot off a loss. Like, you look at it, I mean, Jose Aldo loses to Volkanovski, goes down a weight class, fights Petr Yan for the title. Pretty weird. Yoel Romero loses, and we just continue to give the guy title shots. And then we give him Rumble Johnson. So, yeah, I'm actually all right with it. You know, Justin Gaethje always puts on fight of the night, performance of the night, fight of the year type fight. So in this one case, yeah, I'm fine with it. I mean, a fight between Gaethje and Chandler, that was already talked about even before Charlie Olives entered the conversation. And a fight between Oliveira Gaethje, that's another great one. So yeah, I'm cool with it. Really, the rankings don't make much sense either way. It's the old sport entertainment mix, as they like to say.
All right, Craig, let's keep it as we move on in the 155-pound division. Dana White also said this week that Dustin Poirier, it looks like he's choosing the Conor fight. Obviously, Dana's choosing the Conor fight. He's down with that as well. Because, you know, Poirier's the guy who's really in the driver's seat for if you're ever going to hand a guy a title like Dana used to with Ronda and certain fighters, you'd hand it to Poirier based off the last performance. So here's the quote. Dustin wants to rematch with Conor McGregor. It's smart. That's what he should do. We've been in positions like this before with others who have made the mistake of not taking that fight. Biggest mistake of their lives. So do you agree with Dana here? Do you think that fighters not taking the Conor fight, or I guess more relevant, Poirier taking the Conor McGregor fight, do you think it's the right decision for a fighter to make?
Again, answering a question with a question, but I'll make it a rhetorical one at that. Is there anybody out there that's complaining that Dustin Poirier wants another fight with Conor McGregor? I don't think there's anybody out there. If you are, you're in the vocal minority and you probably have like the egg as your Twitter bio. Like nobody's giving him a hard time. Listen, the guy's got a family. You talked about it before. If they were ever to make a reality show about a guy's life, give it to Dustin and Jolie Poirier. Like that's the show. There you go. So for this guy to, you know, finally get another payday, why the hell not? I mean, he's got the awesome hot sauce. He's a great ambassador of the sport, you know, from a young guy that, listen, his life could have gone six ways to Sunday, totally different than it has now. And from the guy that ended up fighting at featherweight against what, Josh Crispy, to now, totally different guy. So listen, take the fight. And I think, you know, we're probably going to see Poirier maybe rematch with Gaethje, maybe fight the winner of Oliveira and Chandler. If Gaethje isn't there, like Poirier's going to have big fights for the foreseeable future. I'm totally cool with it.
Yeah, I agree. I think that this kid is, that's a big fight. The where it gets interesting at lightweight is, did they book Conor McGregor and Dustin Poirier as the money maker? You know, the old saying of like, you know, sometimes you make the big movie so you can have the clout to make the small movie, you know, in the movie business. Are they booking McGregor Poirier so that they're okay with Oliveira and Chandler not doing great and then allowing maybe the losers to fight and the winners to fight? And then, you know, we all come together again. Could be. You know, maybe they just want to make sure that they have a star coming out of a fight, right? So if you book Poirier and McGregor, no matter who wins and who loses, you still have two stars, right? If you book Oliveira and Poirier, if Poirier loses, you really don't gain that much with Oliveira. You know what I mean? Poirier and McGregor can both leave that third fight and go do big business. So I think they're a little bit concerned about you know, some star making, and they're going to let the Chandler Oliveira. It's weird. I would struggle with Chandler Oliveira being a main event, to be honest with you. But, you know, maybe you put it on a really stacked card. That's the kind of fight you put as the co-main event of this card coming up this weekend, where you have the heavyweights and then those guys.
Yeah, I mean, it makes a lot of sense. So, John, let's throw it over to Matt Allen's favorite MMA promotion going out there. Two big moves happened with the PFL this week. The promotion gained not Chris Rose of BattleBots, but Kenny Florian. And they also had Ray Lewis, you know, that guy that did really bad things in the early 2000s. John, what are your thoughts on these moves and what do they mean for the promotion moving forward?
Wow, that was subtle. That was some subtle shade you threw there. Listen, the Kenny Florian thing is a no-brainer. I don't know why it took this long to do it. Kenny Florian is, one, good at the job of being a commentator. He's got the Anik Florian podcast to kind of help. You know, a lot of people tune into that. So each week, Florian's going to give them the PFL update now, say where he's going to be, do that whole thing. So that'll draw some eyes. So I think, yeah, the Florian thing was way overdue. The Ray Lewis thing is interesting to me because I can't quite figure out what the play is here. Is the play that you sort of brought him in to just have the graphic that we saw, which is Ray Lewis with the letters PFL above his head and all the cash that comes with it? Is it for Ray Lewis to tweet PFL events? Is it? I don't know exactly what capacity they're getting Ray Lewis in. My guess would be, if I were them, my advice would be, you want your fighters in a gym with Ray Lewis. That's what you want. You want him creating content in that way. What do you think they brought Lewis in for?
Okay, so I'm looking at Ray Lewis's Instagram page. This happened today. We're filming this on Thursday. 873,000 followers. He posted to his Instagram and IGTV 18 minutes ago about some workout thing. He posted 9 hours ago to his Instagram about the PFL. He doesn't have that posted to, like, you know, Instagram in his posts. He only put it in a story. That concerns me. Like, how much does this guy care about it? If you put it in a story, again, it's like diamonds. Diamonds are forever. You post that under your post, that lives. People are going to go back and see it. You post it in your story, it's like buying, I don't know, it's like buying tearaway underwear. Like, cool, that was awesome for a night, but we're going to throw it in the garbage right after we're done. And that's what Ray Lewis did with this. So is the PFL tearaway underwear to Ray Lewis? I don't know. But I look at the moves that they made, and I understand why Matt doesn't like the PFL. I like it. Matt doesn't. We're totally different guys. Even though somebody just posted in the YouTube comments tonight and said, Alan thinks this. Like, you know, our name isn't, like, we're not the same, you know, right? But Matt doesn't like them because the roster's made up of a lot of different wrestlers. And yeah, there's a lot of WSOF holdovers, but it's a lot of wrestlers. And the product's kind of boring, and it can be kind of boring. They keep making splashes like this. And yes, it's probably going to rope people in. You know, Ray Lewis, good, bad, or indifferent, whether he posted about it tonight or not, he's going to draw eyes to it. Kenny Florian's a great mind. They have Eve Edwards. They have Randy Couture. They have Sean O'Connell. And I go down through the, they have celebrity investors, Kevin Hart. They have, what's his name there? The big guy, the motivational, Tony Robbins. They've got all of those guys in place. But they had Tony Robbins and Kevin Hart before. And did they really make a big drop in the bucket? Like, I know they're on ESPN now, but are people really getting excited about the PFL? My inbox and my email, it's like every day I get an email, a press release from PFL. We signed with carparts.com. Awesome. Cat's ass, guys. But ultimately, your product sells, your sport sells. And I don't think we're going to see a lot of highlights from the PFL this year. So for me, it's great that they're spending all this venture capital money, but you really got to start putting out a good product. And they're just capitalizing on old names. Pettis, Verdum. You have, like, a lot of old talent. And they're premier talent, like Magomed Kerimov. Who's talking about him outside of, you know, the hardest of the hardcores? Nobody. Like Ray Cooper III, great fighter, really exciting fighter, but we rarely ever hear about him. So I really don't know with the old PFL. I just continue to scratch my head and smile from afar.
Yeah, you know, listen, I think the Ray Lewis thing is a Hail Mary, and the Kenny Florian thing is like a guaranteed first play that you run that you know is going to be a first down every time. So if they get a touchdown off the Ray Lewis thing, great. But I think Florian's going to be the signing that matters. All right, so we're on to sparring sessions. We'll hit this one quick. Michael Bisping said this week, if Stipe Miocic beats Francis Ngannou and John Jones, he's the GOAT of MMA. Sounds good, but do you agree with it?
I mean, I got to go back to the YouTube comments on this one, and I can be quick with it too. John, Matt and I got called out because we said that Stipe was the heavyweight GOAT. We gave Fedor, you know, his props, but we said Stipe, based on his career and, you know, the way he's progressed and the guys that he's fought, he is the greatest heavyweight of all time. And somebody in the comments section said, I'll take my GOAT talk from somebody that's been paying attention to MMA for more than 15 years. You guys don't know what you're talking about. Are you fucking kidding me? Like, I've been dedicated since I was in middle school watching MMA since 2008. And I do this every week, all fucking week. So, listen, I don't give a damn. Stipe doesn't have to beat Ngannou and Jones to be the GOAT of heavyweight. But to be the GOAT of MMA, absorbing all those powers and wins, yeah, I mean, why not? He's up there. He's on that Mount Rushmore.
Well, listen, I'm old as hell, so if they'd like to take it up with me, we can take it up. But here's my question that I would ask them. Is there anybody that Fedor ever beat in Pride that they don't think Stipe could beat? Like, do they really not think that Stipe could have beat Prime Krokop or Nogueira? Or, I mean, listen, these guys didn't come over to the UFC and light the world on fire. Last I checked, you know, John Franklin checks notes, Krokop lost to Brendan Schaub. So, I mean, come on. And listen, when you're heavyweights, anything can happen. But my point is Krokop, Prime Krokop, lost to Gabriel Gonzaga. So let's not overrate Fedor's strict schedule. All right?
Prime.
Miocic has been taking on all the heavy hitters. Okay? Daniel Cormier is a top 10 fighter of all time, beat him 2 out of 3. If I stop there, you can make a heavyweight goat argument. If I just stop there, not for nothing, Daniel Cormier won the greatest heavyweight Grand Prix of all time. Stipe beat him twice. So if you want to come at my boys, come at me. I've been 43 years old. We can have the Fedor conversation anytime you want. All right, let's move on.
Let's move on to Over Under, my favorite segment of the week, John. I don't know if you have any of these stashed away like a squirrel with your Ricolas, but if we're focusing on this weekend's UFC 260, let's go with a few over-unders that I think are a little bit fun. Number of takedowns in the main event, setting them at 2.5. I'm assuming Stipe is the guy that we're kind of assume is going to get a takedown. At 2.5, what do you think, an over-under?
I'm going to take the over. I think Francis is going to spend a lot of time on his ass.
I'm taking the under.
I think Miocic thinks that he can stand with Ngannou, but I think late first or early second, Francis is going to put one on him that he knows he's lucky to have survived, and it's the mat for the rest of the fight.
I think it's going to be the accumulation of damage over Stipe's career, and we're finally going to see it actually kind of bear its ugly head. So, yeah, I'm going to take the under on it. Number of times Joe Rogan says that Sean O'Malley is a real contender in the division at 1.5.
I would hope it's the under, but I'm taking the over because, you know, sometimes Rogan gets a little lazy with the commentary, and I think that he's going to put in his head contender series, and I think I got the over.
I'm going to take the over, too, and that's a tricky one. Like, yeah, there is a contender series bit to it, so why not? Number of pay-per-view buys, conservatively set at 400,000. Over under on that.
Oh, I really want to take the over because I think I want Stipe and Francis to both be guys who pull numbers. I just don't see it. I don't see it with the rest of the card. I think, you know, it's funny, Craig, and this is a conversation for another day. But today I was thinking about boxing and how boxing can just have a top heavy card and still draw huge amounts of pay per view buys and why the UFC hasn't been able to figure that out yet. This is the card that you should be able to do that. Almost where you just say, we're not even doing prelims, show up for these fights. That's it. So I'm taking the under.
I'm taking the under too. I mean, you know, you had a huge blow losing that co-main event. Jamie Mullerkey, comma worthy, opens the main card. You're paying for that. You're also paying for Jillian Robertson to fight Miranda Maverick. So yeah, I'm taking the under. UFC on ABC2 promos at 1.5. Now that's the Darren Till Vittori card. It's loaded. It is a really good fight night card. And you have 2 weeks off between the two. If we set the over-under at 1.5, what are you thinking?
I would say I'll take the under on this one. No, you know what? I'll take the over because it is ABC. It's big ABC. I'll take the over.
Yeah, I'll take the over, but it's only going to be about two. Number of retirements on the card at 0.5. Is Tyron going to retire or not?
You know, I don't think Tyron Woodley doesn't seem like the kind of guy that retires in the cage. I don't know why I'm saying that. It just is a feeling I have. So I'll take the under.
Yeah, I'm going to fall in and out of love with that. Yeah, I'm going to go with the under. Two, number of finishes, 3.5. There's only 10 fights. Over, under.
I'll take the under on based on odds. But nobody's really jumping out at me. So if you see the over or if you see it close, tell me where they're coming from. The Almeida O'Malley fight probably, right?
Almeida O'Malley. Yep. Bukowski Soloshaychuk.
Yeah. I mean, I could definitely see a path towards the over. but I'm still taking the under.
I'll take the over, and we'll move on from there from the over-under segment.
All right, Craig, let's hit for the gram. All I want right now is an update on your interest level for Jake Paul, Ben Askren. It looks like they lost the Antonio Tarver-Frank Mir fight because by the grace of God, some commission has finally said, you are 53 years old, sir, and if you have not fought at least 10 times in the last 10 years, we're sorry, Antonio Tarver. It ain't going to happen. What do you think? Interest level? 1 to 10.
Antonio Tarver, not Bernard Hopkins. Nah. I just want to say this one thing. I got the email today from Fight TV. It said, presented by Triller. Here's your card. I tweeted it out, and nobody liked my tweet, which I found odd. They're marketing the fight. It's Steve Cunningham now, and not Tarver, is going to fight Frank Mir. And they put MMA's bad boy, Frank Mir. The guy's fucking 41, and he got his ass beat in his last number of fights. Like, forget about the Roy Nelson fight. Javi Ayala broke the bone that holds Frank Mir's teeth into his head. Javi Ayala is an awesome guy, perennial underdog, super underappreciated. If Javi Ayala can beat the shit out of Frank Mir, he's not a bad boy anymore. He's fucking 41. This card for me, interest level out of 10, a 2 out of 10. People actually want to see us do predictions and previews for this. Where the fuck were you back when we were doing the Jones Jr. Tyson stuff? Where were you? And you want me to talk about Paul and Askren? You donkeys.
You know what? Just cut real deep. I just realized I'm older than Frank Mir. By 2 years, mind you. So when I was a senior in high school, Frank Mir was a sophomore. Wrap your head around that, folks. One Twitter hitter, the aforementioned Sean O'Malley, addressed the Megan Anderson comments as only he could. We say a lot of things on there, and some people get very upset. I didn't say anything bad, did I? Can't let someone else's words affect how you feel emotionally. You said something about me. I don't know. She's not a coworker anymore, so it is what it is. This guy's just a troll at this point, right?
Yeah, he's just being a little puke about it. Like, don't be it. Again, we say it on the show all the time. This is my stance. Be a good guy. Like, just be a good guy. Be nice. Be humble, be kind. People like trolls, but when you just start talking like this, I get it. You got to kind of lean into the heel thing and you're 12-0 and all that crap, but I'm kind of tired of it. I don't like it. If he wins, maybe he changes his tune. We get him into a baby face again, but I don't like it.
You know, if we ever incorporate sounds or anything like that from movies and stuff into this podcast, here's one I would like to use. In The Godfather, someone comes to, I can't remember if it was Vito. I think it was Vito Corleone. And they're coming and they're whimpering and they're whining about something they need. And he goes, you can act like a man. Sean O'Malley, you can act like a man. Okay, you said something that was stupid. Apologize for it. Move on with your life. All right, post it to the book. Tyron Woodley said, quitting is not an option. He plans to go out on top. Craig, he's not going to go out on top, right?
No, we're not. If Wonder Boy can't get a title shot anymore, then Tyron Woodley's probably not going to get one. So yeah, no. Sadly, no.
All right, let's go start the conversation. Then we'll hit finish strong. Start the conversation this week is Kevin Holland is staking his claim as one of the best trash talkers in MMA history. But unlike some of the other greats, Conor McGregor, Colby Covington, Chael Sonnen, he's letting his behavior bleed into the cage. Now, I have a theory, Craig, that the strength of the shit talking and why it is so effective is that it makes someone who is incredibly disciplined seem very undisciplined, thus making their opponent underestimate them. Colby Covington, Chael Sonnen, Conor McGregor, all very disciplined in cage fighters. Conor's little dalliance with boxing has affected his technique and some of his discipline, but Chael and Colby they have a high level of discipline. Holland doing all this trash talking in the cage, which mind you, those guys never did. Maybe Conor a little bit. Do you think, all right, we talked about this a little bit, you know, inside baseball before this podcast during the week. How much of this can we lay at the feet of Travis Luter, and how much of it is completely on Kevin Holland?
So during posting to the book and one Twitter hitter, I was kind of, my head was in another spot. Because you asked me, what's the best soundbite from MMA? This was the best one from last weekend. I posted it on my Twitter from Bruno Silva in his post fight. He kind of made a nice little Yoshi type of noise. And I thought it was the funniest fucking thing in the world. So I had to share that with the world. Listen, it was really weird. Like, if you look, I think it was between the second and third round. Kevin Holland standing up. He lost the first round. He loses the second round. He's standing up in his corner. He's got his hands up on the cage. He's still barking back and forth to Dana and to Khabib. And you can see Travis Luter there trying to get a word in. And Kevin Holland's not paying any attention. And I think, and Matt talked about this yesterday, but you look at Travis Luter. Travis Luter's been there and done that. He's challenged for titles. He seems to be a good coach. I've never been in his corner. Kevin Holland's earned his black belt in jiu-jitsu under Travis Luter. To me, Travis Luter, probably an underappreciated coach. I think a lot of people would probably agree on that front. Why aren't you listening to him? Like, this happens in hockey. It happens in basketball. It happens everywhere. You look at the Calgary Flames right now. They just hired back Daryl Sutter. Daryl Sutter hasn't coached in a number of years. Why? Because eventually people don't like to listen to Daryl Sutter anymore. He's a drill sergeant, and that message just doesn't really get through. You have it in basketball. You have it hockey. Michelle Therrien's another really good example of a coach that's like that. Is Travis Luter like that? I don't know. But for Kevin Holland to not even pay attention to the guy that helped him get to where he is right now, it just seemed disrespectful to me. And again, I wasn't in the corner, but I could watch it with my own two eyes. So for Holland, I don't know if he underestimated Brunson. I don't know if he bought into the hype too much. But why aren't you listening to your head coach when you need him most? That really kind of hits hard. Maybe Holland needs a change of scenery. Maybe he needs to work with an Antonio McKee at Team Body Shop. Maybe he has to work with Greg Jackson. I don't know who it has to be. A Mike Brown. But maybe Kevin Holland just isn't really kind of listening to Luter, and Luter isn't resonating with Holland. I don't know, but that's what it looked like to me.
The name I've heard was James Krause. I don't know if I agree with that necessarily because of the fact they both fight. Krause is young. Here's my thing. I have this as a dad, and I have this as a teacher, and the irony is that my daughter says this, and I might have her say it. It's not great that my daughter says it because she's only three. Three words, okay? When you're a dad someday, Craig, you'll say these words.
Go fuck yourself.
Close. Your kids will know exactly what they mean. Cut the shit. Okay? Mike Holmgren used to say it to Brett Favre. Brett Favre would get crazy. Holmgren would take him on the sidelines. He goes, hey, can we stop it with the rocket balls? Can we chill out? You have to be able to say to your fighter or impress upon him, hey, cut the shit. It's time to get serious now. I don't care what you said to promote this fight. The fight's been promoted. Cut the shit and let's go. So I think that I don't know if Luter's able to say that to him, but it's definitely what Kevin Holland needs to hear. And if he can't say it, Kevin Holland needs to be self-aware enough to know that somebody needs to say it, because the big cut the shit vibes is John Crouch at MMA Lab. I've seen, he gets this look in his head like, all right, enough. Let's get focused in here. There you go. All right, guys.
Cool, yeah.
We're going to have to save the finish strong for another day. We'll have to owe you one. Craig can be followed at Craig Allen F&P. I can be followed as SM Cornerman. The fight has been stopped. We'll see you next week. Craig, give me one thing from Finish Strong that you're most passionate about.
Diego Sanchez is training an American Top Team with Dustin Poirier. It's the remix to Ignition. He's going back to the top.
He's primed. Maybe he's going to finish on top like Tyron Woodley. All right, guys.
Chris Josh Fabia.
We'll see you next week. Peace.